Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Friday afternoon, May 14th, 2010. It is now 4:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good afternoon, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Send us your email anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. That's comments at libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, sutton-associates.net. In his biweekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Today we have as our guest, and we are extremely pleased to have Mr. James L. Rhodes. He's a very accomplished person. We're going to go through some of that a little later on. He is also a veteran of Vietnam. He's obtaining health care treatments in Hanoi, health care which is being denied him here in the States. He is an activist. He is one of those remarkable people that you don't come across much in your lifetime. We are fortunate to come across him right now. In fact, he's on the line. We're going to click him in, and then we're going to ask him first to give us some background because it's so extensive. And here we go. And folks, hold on to your seats and do call us 646-652-4620. Jim, is that you?
That's me, Joe. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you so much for being our guest this afternoon on Liberty Talk Radio. We consider it an absolute privilege to have you on our program.
The privilege and honor is mine. I'm just appreciative that other people are interested in the state of veterans' health care in the United States.
Jim, I agree with you, but I think there are more people concerned today and becoming more concerned as this comes to light, especially with all of the men and women coming back from Afghanistan, from Iraq, and other places around the world. People are starting to wake up to the fact that the casualties of war don't necessarily just happen on the battlefield, but that battlefield is extended here into the United States itself.
Well, that's one reason I was so enthused about this show today, is because I'm going to give you the background that's going to explain a lot of issues which the average American is unaware of. And you are correct. If you allow me 5 minutes to give you the background information on veterans' health care, and then I'll tell you my story, how that applies to that, and then I'm open to questions or commentary or whatever. But I thought about this long and hard, Joe, and I wanted to lead off with this statement because people just don't understand this. And you're going to ask yourself, how can this happen? And I'm going to explain it to you.
Go ahead.
I want you to understand, everybody in the United States, everybody, including convicted felons, child molesters, and illegal aliens, have 14th Amendment due process judicial review rights.
Correct.
Except the injured American soldier. Now, let me repeat that because people don't understand this. Everybody in this nation, which includes felons, child molesters, illegal aliens, have the right to due process or judicial review. Americans injured in the line of duty do not have this right. Every other person in this country has the right to appear in a real Article III federal court that has enforcement powers. They have the right to cross-examine witnesses. They have the right to dispute evidence. They have the right to present evidence. And they have the right to call expert witnesses. But especially, they have the right to a legal hearing, be it civil or criminal, with an impartial jury. These are rights we don't have. Well, how do you say, what do you mean? I don't understand that. Very simple. Go back to the 1933 Economy Act. The 1933 Economy Act stripped all veterans from due process judicial review because the government then was trying to balance their budget on the back of veterans. Fortunately for us, the 1933 Economy Act was ruled unconstitutional in 1935. Good, you say, but wait a minute. In 1940, those same unconstitutional, non-reviewable clauses in the 1933 Economy Act, which became known as Section 211A, was rewritten into the 1940 Veterans Benefit Act, which gave VA administrators, quote, final and conclusive authority, unquote, that was not reviewable by anyone, any other authority, or any agency but themselves, which stripped us of everything I just told you about, the right to cross-examine, the right to present evidence, the right to call witnesses, the right to a hearing. Ironic, isn't it, Joe, that American soldiers who fought to protect and defend the U.S. Constitution, some even dying for this, but none of us are protected by legislation of Congress by the same 14th Amendment rights which we died and fought to defend.
Now, that sounds, Jim, that yes. sounds, it sounds so hideous. You don't know whether to scream, cry, or just strangle somebody just to get the anger out of yourself, just listening to that, because if I didn't know you better, if I just thought you were a guy on the street holding a flag and mumbling to yourself, I'd say, well, you know, the guy's a lunatic, you know, just let him mumble. But I know, I mean, I don't know the act, but I have 100% confidence that's true. But as sitting here, I say, but how could that be?
Oh, yes. I'm going to briefly give you the Reader's Digest version of how this can be.
Please do.
Okay. Many people have fought this in the past or tried to challenge this in the past. But the reason we could never get an attorney was because of some law that was passed after the Civil War, which Congress limited the amount of attorney's fees to $10 on what they could charge a veteran in their claims process against the government. And that law was not changed, Joe, until after the National Atomic Radiation Survivors had their case in the Ninth Circuit back in the 1980s. So that $10 limitation on attorneys imposed upon us was in effect through most of the 1980s. So that's one reason we couldn't get any help and couldn't get the story out. But I'm going to get to why we got some recognition, because in the late 1980s, there was a case in the Seventh Circuit, the Marizan case, Marizan versus the Veterans Administration and the United States. It began to pick up support and attention, and that was due to two great, tremendous American veterans, Sidney Cooper, a World War II guy out of New York, and Phil Cushman, a Vietnam veteran out of Oregon. They were the brain, so to speak, behind the Marizan case, and they were the ones that were able to push that and guide that through the Seventh Circuit, which presented to us a tremendous breakthrough, which I'll get to in just a second. But when the Marizan case first began to be heard in the Seventh Circuit, it appeared that at long last, the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Disabled American Veterans, and AMVETS were finally going to come out in favor for judicial review and due process. Okay, now, bear in mind, they've been against us all these many years. They've been for the system which we now have in place. Then came in 1986 an infamous blackmail letter authored by Don Ivers and Gail Gomp, who threatened these organizations, and I mean the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, DAV, and AMVETS, with the loss of their free office space, telephones, and various other support services supplied to them in federal buildings if they came out in favor of judicial review and due process. Sadly, all of these organizations reconsidered their position and went back to their old position where they opposed judicial due process for United States veterans. But one thing good did come out of the Marizan case, thanks to Sidney Cooper and Phil Cushman, and that was because Congress was afraid that we were going to get the same rights as they already give child molesters and illegal aliens and convicted felons. They came up with the COVA court system, or the Court of Veterans Appeals. This was created, and it was touted as a tremendous victory for veterans. But what they didn't say was COVA is not an Article III court. It has no enforcement power, which still renders the VA people with final and conclusive authority over all veterans' claims. And there have been, in the past, many instances in which the COVA court has said, hey, yeah, the veteran is right, give him his claim, and the VA said no. And guess what? No prevails. So we've got a worthless court system. But again, it was a step in the right direction. And again, I must thank Sidney Cooper and Phil Cushman.
Right.
Now, that's the background. Let me get to my story, and I'm going to be very, very brief. My story starts toward the end of 1969, when I was hospitalized in the 71st Medical Evacuation Hospital in Pleiku. I was vomiting blood and passing large quantities of blood through my intestines. This is going to sound incredible. It's going to sound like the Twilight Zone. I was visited by an officer who advised me, now please get this, because I fell for this, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
He told me that the Air Force was, quote, overstaff and, quote, over budget, and would I be a good soldier and assist my country by accepting an immediate discharge with no mandatory reserve duty. Now, do you smell a rat there, Joe?
Yeah, I would be maybe a little suspicious at that point.
I wasn't. I just wanted to get the hell out, okay?
Yeah, right. I've been there long enough.
I quite foolishly did not require or get a full medical evaluation before I left.
Right.
The next year, I developed my first growth. And the reason I say growth is because when I started to write about this, the VA lawyers, being the scumbags they are, threatened to bring legal action against me because I kept using the word tumor. I said I had this tumor, and they said, no, you didn't have a tumor. Now, bear in mind, they never examined me for this. So they said, you got to use the word cyst. I said, I know what a cyst is. This is not a cyst. This is a tumor. And so we compromised on the word growth. So I just want you to be aware of why I use the word growth.
Okay.
I developed my first growth in 1970, and I had an additional growth for the next 14 years. So from 1970 to 1984, I had 14 growths cut out of me. The smallest one was over my right eye, and the largest one was in the crease of my right groin area. It was the size of half a dollar, and it was quite painful. None of these were treated at the VA hospital, even though I went there to ask for treatment, to ask for help. The VA did nothing for me relating to these issues. Okay. After I developed my first growth in 1970, the first place I went was the VA hospital in San Francisco, where I was literally chased out of the building, and there was a big, fat nurse who was yelling at me, and I remember this to this day. She said, quote, I was one of those damn Vietnam veterans who was trying to get something for nothing. I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay, because of this incident, I guess that was a blessing in disguise, I learned that there was a code on my discharge. And I have since learned that this was a common practice utilized in against us Vietnam veterans to screw us out of benefits. And that code, when broken down, basically meant, and I wrote this down verbatim, that I was mentally defective with a severe personality disorder prior to enlistment, but this condition was not aggravated by any of my military service.
Jeez.
I had no idea that was on my that code is on my discharge papers, and I found out that it is on thousands of other honorably discharged veterans as well.
Right.
But we'll get to that in a second.
Jeez.
Okay, I would later be denied treatment at a Veterans Administration hospital in Palo Alto. Now this is where my attitude changed. Prior to this incident, I had only wanted to be treated and nothing else.
Right.
But after this happened, my attitude changed.
Right.
They sent a young kid down to talk to me. He was on the VA medical staff. And he told me that I was a rotten, no-good piece of crap and that I was not entitled to receive any service from the VA because I didn't deserve them. That affected my thinking from then on. But not at that time. I had to develop into this. because I found then that I could manage my pain and abuse by consuming large quantities of alcohol, which I did for a number of years.
Right.
And it seemed to work because it was manageable while I was drunk all the time.
Right.
But there came a point in time in my life, you know, when I was looking for certain things, and many years later I got religion and I quit drinking, and it was that point that I literally fell apart because my pain management tool was gone, and I was in pain every day. And God, I'm ashamed to admit this, but I thought about suicide. I actually thought about killing other people. I was just in that much pain every day. And then I ran into a veteran at a Vietnam Veterans Outreach Center. His name was Charles Spring. Chuck is a genius, and he taught me a lot because he was in the same boat I was in, and he told me things which were true, and I didn't want to believe him. He said, you know, the VA and the government doesn't care about me because of cost of money, but if I was truly interested in my health, I would do things for myself like he did. He became an herbal expert, and he began to treat himself through the use of herbs. He was a self-taught guy.
Right.
With a herbicidal poison issue that had it under control. And I was seriously impressed. And I said, Chuck, can you help me? He said, sure. He says, but here's what we got to do. He says, I want a chunk of your hair so I can have it analyzed. Now, at that time, thank God I had kind of long hair. And I said, well, look, I've had blood tests. And he said, no. He says, blood tests don't make it. He says, blood tries to clean itself. He says, we don't want that. He says, the hair has the history of your body.
Right.
He says, that's what I want.
Right.
And he says, and I'm going to send this to a lab in New York. And the reason he sent it to New York was because they thought he was a doctor. Of course, he wasn't.
Right.
But they did things for him, and they would send him bills, and he would pay them. So I said, well, look, I'm really interested in that. I said, at that time, it was only $10 to get a rush job done. So I paid him the extra $10, and he sent my hair to New York to this lab. And I admired this guy. I spent a lot of time with him. And I was at his office the day that the lab in New York called. And they said, hey, we got this sample you sent from your client, and we want to know, why is there a rush job? And he put him on speakerphone because, you know, I was there, and he wanted me to hear. He says, well, look, he says, the guy is sitting right here. He says he's very interested in getting the results. And this lady was gasping in the background. And she says, my God, he's alive.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And, you know, I knew then I had a serious problem.
Right.
Well, anyway, they sent the printout and the analysis back. It's very detailed. And they had a little chart. And the chart said total toxins of poisons in the body. And it said very low, low, normal, acceptable, average, high, extremely high, and my chart, my graph ran off the chart. It ran through the extremely high and off. If there was another paper there, it would have ran on the other paper. But what it did do is it gave Chuck a printout of every toxin and poisonous element in my body. And he showed me, because he'd done this in the past, and especially with himself.
Right.
He says, let me show you what composes Agent Orange. And he says, do you see what this is? And it was like a direct match.
Right.
Now, I was very excited for a number of reasons. One is, I could finally identify what was wrong with me.
Right.
Chuck had a treatment plan, and plus I wanted to use this for other veterans, you know, and perhaps the Vietnamese that were suffering from this. This is before I really got involved on the Vietnamese side. So the first thing I did, quite stupidly, is I ran down to the VA. I got an appointment with their administrators, and I presented them copies of all of this. And I explained to them that they should be using hair analysis and maybe some herbs and whatever.
Oh, I'm sure they appreciated that, right, Jim? They appreciated you telling them that, right?
Let me tell you what happened. Yeah, you're right. So here's what happened. Years later, and I get to this in a second, years later, when I finally got an attorney and all their records, we got copies of all my records, they had stamped in big red letters on the stuff I gave them, and I won't forget this because they're rotten SOBs, unauthorized, unapproved research. Can you believe that?
Mm. And yet it was done by a registered certified lab, right?
Oh, yeah, it was done by a registered certified lab. Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. But they weren't going to use that to help anybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, so I knew I had a problem.
Yeah.
But I also began to realize there was no help for me here.
Right. You seem to be walking into brick walls no matter which way you turned at this point. It must have been very frustrating.
Yeah, and plus, you know, I've been treated very horribly.
Yeah.
But I felt confident because my condition began to deteriorate to an extent. You know, Chuck could help me to only a certain, you know, a certain level.
Right.
But I felt I could get treated in Vietnam. But the problem was we had an embargo on against Vietnam.
Right.
So I contacted a good friend of mine. His name was Stephen Manchester, who's an attorney in San Jose at the time. I said, Steve, I said, I'm going to violate the embargo. I said, but I'm going to do it above board. And we drafted a letter and mailed it to the United States State Department, and I informed them that I was going to be violating the embargo. I was going back to Vietnam for medical reasons, and that I would surrender myself upon returning at LAX. I told them when I was going to arrive and when.
Right.
And I said I would be available for arrest at that time. But Stephen Manchester had the authority to bail me out or do what it was to get me out of jail.
Right.
And Steve said something that was, he was a little bit ahead of the game on this because he was a bit older than me. Of course, you know, him being an attorney and me just getting out of Vietnam and stuff. He said, Jim, he says, I'm not worried about them arresting you. He says, that's not the problem. He says, I'm worried about them killing you. He says, because if they arrest you, he says, you get a day in court. He says, I don't think they would want that, especially with what you know. And again, I'm not going to be going into all that because there's more to the story here than meets the eye.
All right. Jim, excuse me.
We had that set up.
Jim, I just need to you stop think? A station identification, so hold it right there. I'm just glued
sure.
to this mic, and this is fascinating. I apologize for interrupting you. Folks, you're listening.
Not a problem.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us this afternoon, we have James L. Rhodes, who's telling us about his experience as a veteran, a Vietnam veteran, and his quest for medical care and what he went through from the very, very inception of leaving Vietnam to date. This is a compelling story. I know there are people out there. I know people want to ask questions. So just hold off a little while on the phone calls until, you know, we will get a good point. We know where we are. Call-in number is 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Just hold the phone lines just for another 10 minutes or so, and then we'll take some calls. Thank you. Okay, Jim, go ahead.
Okay, so I had that set up. So if the State Department arrested me, I was going to get bailed out by Stephen Manchester. I felt somewhat confident about going to Vietnam, even though I had to violate embargo and going through Thailand, because I had previously established a relationship with the Vietnamese permanent mission to the United Nations that was in New York City.
Right.
Then they were at a place at 20 Waterside Plaza. They're no longer there, but that's where they were. And I had extensive dealings with them and discussions on herbicidal poisons, and I felt pretty good, even though we had no relations with them. But I was still nervous. I did arrive in Saigon out of Bangkok, and I went to a hospital. Now, then English was not the official auxiliary language like it is now, and so I had to get an interpreter. Yeah, but a few doctors did speak English, and the first thing they gave me was diluted cobra venom for my pain. And here's how that was explained to me. They explained that when the cobra strikes you in the jungle, that he paralyzes your central nervous system.
Right.
But if you dilute that to a point and you drink the venom, it has a calming and soothing effect on you, and
okay.
which it did.
Right.
So that was really good. So that's the first thing I felt really relief, the first relief in years. I also got deep body massages, heat treatments, a bundle of herbs, acupuncture, and they had a class on mental conditioning, which I think is very, very important. Because in the class that was after mine, there were people who were going to die from young to old. And all it was a preparation for death.
I see.
And it was, I can't really describe it, you know, but it was, I thought it was really good. Plus, I took extensive notes and was allowed to do research at their herbicidal poison museum. I want to point out the fact to me that everybody in Vietnam was extremely friendly to me. Everybody went out of the way to make me feel at home. And one day I was sitting on my bed in the hospital, and this old couple, they were rice farmers, they walked by, and they thought I was Russian, because remember, Americans were forbidden to go to Vietnam.
Right.
So they came in to talk to me, and they found out I was an American, and I spoke through an interpreter, and they sat down, and we talked for a long time, and they told me that they were very sorry for me, that the American War, as they called it, must have been a very bad experience for me, that they were, you know, very, very sorry. They would pray for me, and anything they could do, they would be willing to do. And gosh, it was just like, you know, the grandma and grandpa you never had.
Yeah, but that's amazing. You would think that there would be so much hatred that they would want to commit some crime against you, you know, for being an American. Isn't that absolutely American? We don't take that attitude here at all on anything. But yeah, that's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
But let me tell you the rest of the story, Joe.
Please.
During the war,
yeah,
U.S. forces killed 6 of their children.
Oh, my God.
The same people that told me that they were sorry for me.
Oh, God.
Now, this made a significant impact upon me because, I tell you, they exhibited so many virtues like long-suffering, forgiveness, and compassion, and they had so much sympathy for me. The thing I thought then, and I think now, is I want to be like them. I am not like them for the reasons you said, because I thought when I came there, people would say, well, you get what you deserve, you SOB, or,
right,
you
exactly.
know, or who feels, you know, well, you served your right, you know, something of this nature. But it was just totally the opposite.
Right.
When I first told this story in the States, the first thing people were yelling at me, you know, uninformed people, well, you were just a stooge of the commies. They set all this up, and they paid those people to go in. You know, well, nobody knew where I was going or what I was going
right.
to do
right.
or who I was going to see.
Right.
The whole country was like that. When they found out I was an American, they wanted to come and talk to me, and they told me that they were glad to see me. You know, the welcome back, they would say, and it was just great. And that's one reason. Like, I've been there 10 times now, and I've been throughout the country, and everybody I've met is this way. They are just the most loving, compassionate, and friendly people I've ever met.
That's amazing.
Now, I know people here would dispute that, and to that I say, this is my story. This is what's pertinent to me or what has happened in my life. They may have had other circumstances, but I can only tell you what's happened to me.
Right, but yours is not conjecture or anecdotal. Yours is personal experience, and it's direct. So we don't question that, you know, unless we question you as an individual, which we're not doing. But other people are just taking what they hear on TV and regurgitating it and then responding to you, which I think this is a sad commentary. But please go, Jim.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up in just a second, because
sure.
When I came back, this is my first trip over, I was not arrested, and I'd never been harassed by the State Department.
Well, why weren't you arrested? I mean, how come you weren't arrested when you returned to LAX?
Because it would have given me a date in court, and okay, that's the investigative conclusion of my story.
I see. Okay.
Well, you do in 1 minute, but I'm going to answer that question.
Okay.
When I returned stateside, the first thing I learned was the ritual of the sweat lodge, and from that date I've been tumor growth free. But let me give this word of caution out. I know there have been some bad experiences with people who are not of Native American culture who've tried to experience the sweat lodge. The sweat lodge is not for everybody, and if you have to pay money to go to one, that's not a sweat lodge. The sweat lodge is a spiritual experience. And all I will say about it at this point is two things. One, it's not for everybody. And two, I will guarantee you, hell is much cooler.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so, I will tell you about that. I began doing a lot of writing, Joe, about veterans' rights, the VA, Agent Orange, and U.S. and Vietnam victims. This angel in New York, Sid Cooper, I mentioned him earlier, somehow read about me or found out about me, and he called me. He said, are you that guy that's fighting the government for Agent Orange issues? I said, yes, that's me. He says, how are you financially? I said, well, not good. He says, well, I got an attorney for you. And I thought to myself, well, this is a crackpot, you know. And then you run into him all the time. I said, yeah, sure, right, okay.
Right.
He said, no, he says, a guy will be contacting you soon. That'll be your attorney. I said, yeah, okay. A couple of days later, William Smith from Los Angeles called me. And he identified himself as being my attorney. And I said, oh, crap, another crackpot. come to find out, he was attorney. And when I was able to confirm that, I said, look, Mr. Smith, I don't have any money to pay you. He said, don't worry about it. Sid Cooper's already paid me.
Wow.
Well, he handled my, he took up my case against the VA.
Wow.
First thing we noticed, Are you there?
Oh, Jim, yeah. Okay, we had a blip somewhere. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Okay, the first thing I noticed after maybe somebody's trying to call me, but I'm going to ignore it.
Okay.
Is when Mr. Smith took my case, my claim file folder had been altered, and this is a very sad but tragic common occurrence with us veterans. The guy that altered my claim file folder was a guy named T.A. Verrill, who has a history of doing these things. He was a guy that destroyed documents so the National Atomic Radiation Survivors couldn't get their benefits. The same guy. I also noticed that the VA had entered, some administrator had entered the comment that my Agent Orange condition was, quote, inherited from my mother, unquote, although none of the VA personnel have ever examined my mom. And so I began to get really, really happy about going to court because to expand upon the question you asked earlier, this would have given me an opportunity to present in a court of law, because we're going to go at that time to the COBA court. We're going to present legal and scientific evidences that link Agent Orange to a lot of things, and we're going to be able to enter into evidence, if you will, materials that could be used not only by other veterans but the Vietnamese as well. And so I was really, really very happy about this. I was like on cloud nine until William Smith called me and he said, Jim, we're not going to go to court. I said, why not? He said, well, you're never going to guess what the VA did. And I said, well, what'd they do? He said, well, they service-connected me and awarded me a claim, not on Agent Orange, but based upon something I told you earlier, me, quote, having a mental defective condition that was aggravated by combat, unquote. So here's what they did, Joe, is they claimed that I was mentally defective when I enlisted, and combat aggravated it, so they got rid of me. Based upon that alone, they should have backpaid me to the date of discharge, which of course they didn't. I got no back pay, but this is a common ploy they use. So I won the case, but I had no way of introducing Agent Orange material. So I was really ticked off. So I told Mr. Smith, I said, you know, there's got to be something we can do. He said, Jim, he said, think about this for a month, and then when your head is clear, call me back. So I did. I said, I thought about it. I said, I want to pursue this on behalf of other veterans and the Vietnamese who were suffering from herbicidal poisons. Mm. He says, are you sure you want to do this? Because this may cost you your claim. I said, yes, I want to do it. I said, will you help me do it? And he said, yes, I will. And I felt really, really, really good until the next week when somebody called me and told me that Mr. Smith had mysteriously died. And I've not been able to find anybody to take up that cause yet.
Right.
But basically, in a nutshell, Reader's Digest version, that's my story.
All right. We have a caller on the line. Would you like to take that call now, Jim?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Caller, you're on the line, area code 918-298. Your question or comment, please.
Yes. Mr. Rhodes, I was hesitant calling in because your story was so engaging. I didn't want to interrupt, so it looks like you appreciate you sharing your story. I really admire your courage and persistence and in fighting the good fight and bringing attention to just the terrible mistreatment that our government provides for our war veterans. And so I admire what you're doing.
Thank you.
My question is, I guess two thoughts from someone from your background and experience. One, I'd like for you to, one thing that does seem to be getting attention in the media with the military operations today is the frequency and treatment for psychotraumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And being a civilian and not having anyone in the military that I've been able to observe from this, just wondered your thoughts on PTSD and how the VA addresses that or ignores those dangers and risks. And I would do a follow-up question. I could either offer it up now or hold and follow up.
Just hold a little because I don't forget this. That's an extremely good question. But one of the things that the Marizan case did prove, although the VA disputes it, is we proved there was a quota system in place. And that is that there's only so many slots based upon the congressional budget for people who draw 100% or 90% or 0% or 10% or whatever. And your PTSD programs, of which I've gone through several since I was granted service connection, I think are, you know, for me they were pretty good. But again, it's based upon allocations of funds and who gets service connected to attend them. My opinion is this. I think we should abolish the rating system unless somebody is suing specifically for compensation and just say, look, if you are a veteran and you think you've got some of these problems, then you're more than welcome to attend these programs, which they don't do now. Perhaps, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but one of the most famous people to suffer from PTSD that was kicked out of the VA and later became infamous was Timothy McVeigh. Did you know that?
No.
He went to Minneapolis to apply for a PTSD clinic, and he was denied access, and we all know what happened after that. But you don't really see that in print anywhere. But I think that any veteran, who, regardless of, like me, for example, when I was discharged, according to them, I got an honorable discharge. There was nothing wrong with me, even though I was bleeding a lot internally. But yet they had it coded that I was mentally defective. So with all that smoke and mirrors thrown out, I think that if you show up at the VA and say, look, I need to go to a PTSD clinic, that clinic should be available to you, no questions asked.
Wow. May I ask you a quick follow-up question?
Sure.
Maybe a little bit off topic, but as I'm sure you're well aware about the Gulf of Tonkin being the incident and the catalyst to get United States involved in Vietnam.
That's correct.
I've done a significant amount of research, and I wondered if you have either any comments about that, or more recently, if there's anything about the events of the September 11th attack that might be disturbing to you.
The Gulf of Tonkin, as we all know, was a lie, and that came out when Daniel Ellsberg released the Pentagon Papers. Let me avoid September 11th for right now, because I want to get to the misconceptions about Vietnam, because some of their veterans asked me, and I had no answer for this, and that was, when your side understood the Gulf of Tonkin was a lie, why didn't you withdraw from Vietnam? I think it's a good question. Now, many people don't understand why we were there to begin with. First off, we were told, at least I was told, that we were there to prevent these godless commies from taking over South Vietnam, and then they were going to take over, you know, everybody else and come to Malibu Beach. And
the domino theory.
Yeah, they were just pawns of the Soviet government and this, that, and the other. And what we were failed to be told is this. And let me ask you this. Were you aware that during the Second World War, Ho Chi Minh worked for the OSS, which was the forerunner of the CIA? And he led teams in to pick up American pilots that were shot down by the Japanese. Did you know that?
I had not done that research to know that.
He was. I've actually seen photos of the U.S. serviceman that he worked with. Ho Chi Minh also, and a lot of people don't know this, actually came to the United States to try to prevent a war. This is during the last stages of World War II. Because he figured the French would come back, and he wanted the United States to use its influence to stop France from reoccupying Indochina. And a lot of people don't understand as well, Ho Chi Minh was a scholar when it came to the United States Constitution. And he attempted to address the idiots in Congress, and they told him words to the effect of, who are you? You know, you don't represent any government. You're just a short little Asian guy. You have no credentials. And you think you can come here and address us? Well, we kind of all know what happened after that. It was very, very tragic. And it gets back to, I'm with Obama when he says we should at least listen to everybody, because I think had we listened, things would have been different. He thought that the United States would help Vietnam because of historically what happened was the French turned tail and got out of Vietnam when the Japanese invaded. So they were no longer an occupier of Vietnam. It was the Japanese. So they were not a French colony. When the Japanese surrendered, Ho Chi Minh did a very intelligent thing. He declared independence. Mm-hmm. And if you read the Vietnamese Declaration of Independence, it's very similar to the United States Declaration of Independence. As a matter of fact, if you read the first couple paragraphs, you couldn't tell the difference between the two. So he patterned his Declaration of Independence after what he knew to be true in the United States. But unfortunately, we didn't recognize them as being independent, nor did France, and France reoccupied Vietnam. But historically, and the Vietnamese are correct on this, after the Japanese were defeated and before France reappeared, they declared independence, thinking the United States would support them, and we did not. Now, I'm not really trying to duck your question on September 11th, but let me tell you the reason I'm not going to answer that or give you my personal thoughts on that.
Sure.
It's because I have written a great deal about the Vietnamese who are suffering from herbicidal poisons.
Yes.
And that has gotten me death threats and people have vandalized my property and whatever. And the last time somebody sent me an email, this is the way it went. Now, if you can follow this logic.
Yes.
Said, you were trying to help the Vietnamese victims of herbicidal poisons. Now, bear in mind, these kids are kids, you know. They don't belong to any party or political affiliation. It wouldn't matter to me if they were. But this guy said, these people are communists. I'm helping communists. Therefore, I am a communist. Therefore, I am anti-American, anti-Christian, pro-Al-Qaeda, pro-Bin Laden, pro-Taliban. I'm the type of person that wants Iran to have a nuclear program, and I love Hugo Chavez, and I deserve to die.
I'm with you. You know? Yeah. I respect your comment to that, and as you probably know, 70% of the victims' families' questions were not answered. And one of my favorite quotes from retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman is, "The truth about 9/11 is we don't know the truth, and we should."
Well, I will say this: Jesse Ventura was right in the show Conspiracy Theory.
Yes. Yes, it's a rabbit hole that not many people want to go down, and there's more unanswered questions than answered, and obviously, if you're in tune with Jesse Ventura and your other sources, it sounds like you're awake to the tragedy, and we can just leave it at that.
Yeah, yes, I am, and I appreciate that very much.
Jim, thank you very much. I'm sorry, Jim.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much for calling. We're going to stop just for station identification just for a second. Later, folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us, we have James L. Rhodes. He's a Vietnam veteran, and he's giving us background that is absolutely fascinating and almost somewhat unbelievable, but you know it's true, and it's not pretty. It actually hurts. I'm getting angry because I can imagine the frustration that this gentleman has been through. I don't think I could have been the man he was and been through all of that. But if you're listening in and you do have a question, our call-in number is 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. Of course, our email is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Jim, where did we leave off? I'm sorry, before our caller. Where did you want to go from here?
You know, this has moved along so quickly, I'm not exactly sure, but... you were commenting on earlier about, and I agree with you, about your amazement at the Vietnamese people being so forgiving, especially to people like me.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say, in case you didn't mention this before I came on the air, that my plight with the VA here and just my constant fighting with them about, you know, about what I consider to be my rights as a veteran, and how they don't respect those, and yet I go to Vietnam, I get treated there, although I have to pay for it. It's very, very reasonable, very cheap, and everybody treats you as if you're somebody special. Let me tell you the mindset. In 2008, I was involved in a motorcycle accident, and I required surgery in Hanoi. And I was taken to, I insisted to be taken to the Vietnamese hospital. I did not want to go to a foreign hospital. I went to the Vietnamese hospital. and they worked on me and provided the surgery. And then I required 2 weeks of follow-up. Now get this, and what they were going to do, and I didn't really want this done, was they injected something in me that set my veins on fire, but they said it would help me heal more rapidly, and I had to have that done twice a day. And I was going to try to kind of weasel out of some of those treatments. And did you know that doctors from the hospital actually came to the place I was staying to bring me to the hospital to make sure I didn't miss any treatment?
On our standards, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, and the other thing, as I get older, and this is one reason I enjoy being there, is their use of alternative medical things like practices as acupuncture and herbs, because I know many people go to the VA and they get drugs for this and drugs for that, and I'm not into that. I did enough drugs during my tour in Vietnam, if you know what I mean. But what happened was they are into prevention, right, not treating something after it happens. They would rather prevent something from happening, which is totally different from what our drug industry is doing here. And I really like that. But then again, you look at it, is because their circumstances are much different.
Right.
Their attitude, well, I'll give you an example. The guy that operated on me, I think, made about $400 a month. That's U.S. And I asked him, I said, doesn't it bother you that foreigners come here and we make a lot more money than you? And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he says, no, I'm serving people. I would do it for nothing.
Wow, that's something you hear in the United States an awful lot, isn't it? Jim, let me, if I'm a listener, the average listener, I hear what you're saying, but what I'm saying to myself is this, and I'll bet there are hundreds of people out there, if not thousands, who may be listening, who have got to be thinking this way, saying, this man cannot be right, because what he is saying is that it's just not one bad person in government that they hired by mistake, but it's the it's the system, and then the people who probably were innocent people when they started, and they come into the government, actually buy into that program and become corrupt. And he says, that cannot be true. I mean, how could all these people be so mean and rotten and unfeeling and uncaring and so unethical and immoral? You name the adjective, and it applies. So this guy cannot possibly be correct. He must be a kook. I mean, this is what's happening in radio land right now as we speak. So I want to bring it up. Now, I believe you. I'm not questioning you. I'm just saying that this is the mindset of the average American. Oh, this guy's nuts. Oh, yeah, you can't, We would never do that. Our soldiers come back. We'll do anything to help them, no matter what the circumstances are.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I really appreciate the point, because it's pure BS. You're right. But then again, ask yourself this. And I've been actually thrown out of American Legion halls and VFW halls. When my point is, okay, we've got the 1940 Veterans Benefit Act. That sounds good. The average person says, hey, they've got a system to help them. But what good is the system when we don't have the same rights? And this is my point. All I'm asking is for the same rights a child molester has. All I'm asking is the same rights an illegal alien has. All I'm asking is the same right a convicted felon has. And people are saying, well, are you nuts? And all I got to say is, okay, I've just told you the truth. Check it out.
Right.
Look at Marizan versus the United States and the Veterans Administration back in the 1980s, and just follow that case or follow the Veterans Benefit Act, and really ask yourself, why are we the people to fight and get injured and die for the Constitution? Why are we not covered under the protection of the document that we went off to fight and defend? And that I think is a good question. But it's like you say, people hear this and they say, well, that can't be true. And they Well, I'll tell you, this is like my brother's family, God bless him. My younger brother spent 21 years in the Army, God bless him. And when he got out, he got out on a partial disability, which meant they sent him to the VA. And he kept telling me, he said, God, I'm just tired all the time. And so, and I saw his records as well. They had him listed as a hypochondriac. You know, he'd go there and say, yeah. And my doctor has even told me, he says, he asked that I not mention his name, so I'm not. But he said, listen, he says, we have a deadline of 20 minutes. We have to get you in and out of this office in 20 minutes. And that includes writing the report about you.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God.
That's your guidelines.
That means he's got, so you have 1 minute with him, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, my brother kept saying, I'm tired. And this went on for a long time. And so finally one day he collapsed. And I said, Jesus, Ronnie, why don't you go see a real doctor? And he did, and unfortunately, what the real doctor told him was the truth. He said, you got about 4 months to live.
Oh, God.
And that was almost the day. He died in 4 months.
Oh, God. You know, I think I have a response when you say, how could it be that the government treats the soldiers the way, the veterans the way they do, after they have gone overseas to defend the Constitution? And do you know my cynical answer to that is, Jim? Because you were not sent overseas to defend the Constitution. That's what they told you you were doing. You were going overseas for reasons that unbeknownst to us, and you are just simply a pawn in this whole game. And if you die, not their problem, neither do they care. And I know it's a very cynical way, but that's the way I've learned to look at it. And I hope I didn't...
No, you know, actually, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
I thought it was an argument.
Because,
but
because the main lie about Vietnam was to prevent communist aggression, but yet how many people know that when Vietnam defeated France, that they were guaranteed national elections in 1956, and it was the United States that stopped those elections. Hey, imagine us.
Yeah,
democracy.
Right. Yeah, that's
so,
right.
You know, we stopped the elections.
Yep.
And then if you look closer, the guy we put in charge of the South was nothing but a puppet of American corporate interests.
That's right.
I mean, I see that now. I didn't then.
That's right. It's a money game. And folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're interviewing Mr. James Rhodes, a veteran of Vietnam, giving us background in history that, I tell you, is curling the few hairs that I have on my head, and really enlightening us as to the way we should think about war, the plight of our veterans, and our government itself. And it's very enlightening and intriguing in a way, but it's maddening. I hope you're listening. If you are listening, we still have a little bit of time. 646-652-4620. Please do call in. 646-652-4620. We do have time for just one more call, so we'll take the first call that comes in, and then we'll have to take it from there. Jim, what is your take on the veterans now that are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq? Apparently a very, very large, well, percentage-wise, a large portion are coming back not so much with physical disabilities, but with some sort of mental impairment, whether it be just readjusting, guilt, you name it. I can't go through a list because I just don't know what they are, but apparently that is becoming as high a percentage as it was in Vietnam, and they're coming back and not being able to adjust, but yet they're okay. They're not physically wounded. What is your take? What do you know about that, and what is your take on it?
Again, it gets back to the Marizan case where they have to be okay because there's no slots for them to receive service-connected disability pensions or any type of service-connected monies. It's all a matter of money. But again, like I said earlier to the guy that called in first, is I believe these guys, whoever they are, should just be allowed to show up at a VA hospital or clinic and say, listen, I need to talk to somebody about post-traumatic stress. And rather than go through all this rigmarole about are you eligible or you have to take this test or you got to do it, just let them go to the class. Don't kick them out like they did Timothy McVeigh, because otherwise you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Let me just say, I didn't go to a PTSD class until years after I'd come back because it took me that long to, quote, qualify for it, okay? But when I'm overseas, like in Hanoi, and I use that as an example because that's where I spend most of my time, I can talk to their veterans about their experience. And with the skills I've learned from the PTSD classes here, just being able to unload and then getting their response, you know, this is the way it was there. Actually, it was their homeland. And then just being around a supportive environment. And in this case, for me, this is going to sound strange. My supportive environment is my former enemy. They understand me better than I've been treated here.
That is so unbelievable.
At this stage in my life, Joe, where I'm looking at, you know, I'm considered to be now an elderly person or whatever, I choose to be around friends.
Right.
I choose to be around people I trust.
I understand.
And unfortunately, you know, as some may say, those friends and the people I trust happen to be in Hanoi. And I know that has angered a lot of people.
Oh.
But that's just my own personal experience. I'm not suggesting you do it. I'm just telling you what I found to be my support.
Yep.
And that's those poor people that we screwed over.
Yeah. And the general ignorance of America and the Americans and the comic book history that we feed American children as well as American adults that they actually buy makes your story, you know, so unbelievable. And obviously a response by many people saying, well, you're a communist, you're anti, getting the same response you did as you had mentioned before. And yet we don't, I guess it's a neurological response. We do not like to violate our belief systems. And we developed this belief system about the United States that we can go anywhere and whatever we're doing is good. We can destroy an entire country, but it was for their own good. And yet, if you criticize that, you're un-American, no good, you know, what a communist, whatever else. And I find that maddening because I find that I cannot have a conversation about any of these subjects unless I'm just pro-government on everything. I just go along with the comic book history. And it really disturbs me.
You're right. And what a lot of, well, let me just share this with you because I know a lot of Americans don't know this. We speak a great deal about, you know, the godless communists, especially in Hanoi. But, you know, Hanoi will turn 1,000 years old this October 10th.
Yeah.
There's going to be a big celebration there. And when Hanoi was first founded as a city, now, this is going to surprise a lot of people. There are four what they call shields that were put into place to protect Hanoi. And on the north end, it was like the Quan Trang Temple, which is a holy place. On the south end is the Kim Lien Communal House, which is a holy place. On the east is Bak Mai Temple, and on the west is Chu Li Temple. All of these are religious places, which they call shields.
Right.
And one of the most common questions I've gotten when I talk about modern-day Hanoi is, you mean there are churches there?
Yeah. Right. Jim, we have about 30 seconds to go. Can you give us a 20 second wrap up? Is there a website that you'd like our listeners to go to or whatever? And I would also, before you do that, I'd like to invite you to send me an email with a mailing address and your T-shirt size. I'd love to send you an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt. Okay,
but outstanding. Okay. No, I don't really have a website, but I will say this. If you are an American veteran who's suffering from herbicidal poisons and you cannot get treated here, I will guarantee you there is treatment available for you overseas. And if somebody calls in or whatever, Joe, along those lines, please give them my email address.
I certainly will.
I know doctors and acupuncturists and people in Hanoi that would be more than happy to see you. And like I say, I spent a day in the hospital when I was there cost me about $20.
Right. Jim, we're going to lose our phone line in about 40 seconds. I want to thank you very much for being our guest. Love to have you back at a date real soon, if you don't mind.
Well, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Same here, Jim. Thank you so much, and good luck to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow. 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 This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for the financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.